Hello, and welcome to another episode of Reason Town, a podcast about reason and the community that makes it awesome. I'm your host today, Jared Forsyth, and we have another interview episode, this time with Ben Sanssouci and Avery Morin. We'll be talking about Reason game development, compiling Reason to Native, and Reason on Windows. Many thanks to our bandwidth sponsor, TylerMcGinnis.com, which provides the linear course-based approach to learning web technologies. They've got lots of really great content on React and React Native, among other things. One announcement, the first ever Reason conference is happening in May in Vienna, Austria. It's going to be a really good time. I'll be there giving a workshop and a talk, and I'm really looking forward to it. There are still tickets available, and they're also looking for sponsors. So if your company wants to invest in emerging web technologies, check it out. Okay, let's get started. Welcome, Ben and Avery. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi.
Hey.
To start things off, I'm going to ask you the question that I ask all of our guests. How did you get into Reason, and what initially attracted you to it?
Okay, I think I'll answer that. So I went to college with Cheng, and this one time he kind of like called me up and told me, hey, we should look into OCaml. I was kind of bored at that time. And so I decided, yeah, okay, let's do it. We read the real world OCaml, and then we started building stuff. And he was like, okay, let's, you know, it would be cool if we had like a different syntax for OCaml. And I was like, okay, yeah, I can do that. While he was telling me all this stuff, he was still in school. And his last semester, he had a research project, and his research project, he decided to make on kind of that, like, how would you abstract over syntaxes so that like people could write with different syntaxes and it would be the same AST under the hood. Mm-hmm. So that like Clojure people would write with like a Lisp like syntax, and then more JavaScript people would have their JavaScript syntax, and it'd be great. And so that was his research project, and he kind of asked me to help him. So we forked some repo that I forget.
Okay.
And we actually implemented in about a week a little Lisp syntax for OCaml. And we had those editor tools that could toggle between OCaml and Lisp in the middle of writing something.
Oh, cool.
So that was it was kind of funny because that ended up being basically what Reason is.
Yeah.
I kind of had no idea what was going on at that time. And then he went to Facebook and then invited me in, and I kind of, you know, signed an NDA there and then learned about Reason internally before it was an open source thing.
Yeah.
So I met Jordan and I don't know, Jordan is really good at selling Reason. So I got really, really excited about it. And then when in open source, I got Avery excited about it because it was language design, and making a new language is always cool.
Yeah.
And so what initially attracted me to it was very, very sales pitch-y. Like, it was all about, you know, everyone having their own syntaxes and the editor, like a AST editor rather than a text editor. Those kind of crazy out there dreams.
Yeah.
And I was like totally sold on this. And so I kind of just started working on it. And now like two and a half years in, we're not there yet.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's as front and center as it used to be.
That's right. I think those dreams were nice to get us started, and we kind of became aware that, you know, you have to solve the real world product problems so that, you know, product teams can adopt you, and then you go and make the really fancy stuff later on. So that's when we started doing more JavaScript syntax stuff like that to and then cater to really JavaScript developer, the same workflow and all that stuff. Yeah, so that's kind of TLDR how we're here.
Gotcha.
We're not forgetting those dreams.
Yeah. So Avery, what sold you on it when Ben told you about it?
Yeah, I mean, Ben always had a knack of convincing me to join him on whatever project he was doing. I remember back he convinced me to learn JavaScript at some point, and then Reason came along, and that was a pretty easy sell, I guess, because I was always into compilers and things like that, and especially the idea of getting, you know, type systems that were cool in a space where you could use them in your day job type of
right.
thing. And I think that aspect of Reason's mission is what speaks to me the strongest.
Awesome. So probably the flashiest thing that the two of you have worked on is reprocessing. Could you tell me first let our audience know what reprocessing is, and then tell us a little bit about how it got started.
Sure. So basically, reprocessing is a canvas-like API for drawing graphics that can run on web or native or Android and iOS with varying amounts of ease. But the first two are pretty ironed out right now, and we're working on the rest. Or maybe Jared's working on the rest. Anyway, but to get back to your question, yeah, so basically I saw this thing called processing, which is a graphics library that's been around for a decent amount of time in sort of, you know, some research space, some educational space, and got inspired by that as an educational tool, and then decided, hey, okay, maybe I can port this to Reason and see, you know, can Reason be an educational language maybe in the future? And so that was the original goal there, and like see, okay, how can we make it so that somebody can get pictures on the screen really fast?
Yeah,
so that was pretty cool. And then we sort of got to that point, and that was like, you know, last December, like a year ago, and we were just like, okay, we got a triangle on the screen, good job. And just gradually started building it out to being more and more of the processing API. And then here and there, you know, making calls about where to stick to that API and where we can make it maybe easier to use or fit the Reason language better. The goal was really like, okay, can we make this accessible and still have types and like all the things that like people say, oh, you can't prototype quickly if you have types.
Right.
And sort of trying to disprove that, I guess, or at least prototype out a proof against that. After we built out this API, we were like, okay, let's try it out. And so we did a couple of, you know, some projects and then some little live streams of us making little games and testing out, you know, does this actually work, you know? And it seemed to work in...
We made a couple games. Yeah. We made Flappy Bird 2048, some puzzle game. And then we also participating in Ludum Dare 40, which was really fun. It's a game jam. And in 72 hours, we made a little game.
Using reprocessing. And so that really sort of, I think that put the seal on it for us that, okay, you can iterate quickly in this system and it'll actually hold your hand and help you out rather than getting in your way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Way cool. It's interesting how you mentioned education. Processing JS is what we use at Khan Academy in our JavaScript course. We've seen how the processing library can be really good for education. Do you still see that as a future of reprocessing, or have you moved more over into game development?
I think I still see it as a future there. Seeing Khan Academy choose it was also one of the influences for me to pick it as an educational language. And then the other one was seeing the Coding Train YouTube videos.
Oh yeah, I've seen those. Those are really cool.
Yeah. So those were pretty inspiring. Seeing how it was possible to just build up like very, you know, varying complexities of applications like pretty surprisingly quickly. That sort of blew me away, I guess, when I saw them and I was like, oh, okay, there's some real potential here for people completely new to programming to see something really cool and compelling.
Something else too about the Coding Train is that the person presenting, I forget his name, is just so excited.
Yeah.
And he's so happy about doing it, about teaching people. And you really get into it. I don't know. I watched a lot of his videos because I thought it was so fun. Just, you know, it's a reminder of what got me into programming in the first place, actually.
Yeah.
It's just this excitement of building a thing and it's cool and it looks like something. It has visuals.
Yeah. Daniel Shiftman, I guess, is the guy doing those.
Yeah.
Pretty neat guy.
Yeah, cool. And
we'll
add a link to those to that channel in the show notes. Ben, when you say it reminds you what got you into programming in the first place, whenever I look at a new programming language, one of the first things I do is try and make something graphical, some art or some game, because of that quick feedback, kind of the quick validation of, yes, I can do this to make something cool. And I think reprocessing is in a good place to provide that for Reason.
Yeah, there's something satisfying about it. It's also for new programmers, it's, I think, very satisfying just to see things moving around on a screen and that you can interact with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, so what do you see in the near future of Reason game development or Reason graphics programming?
I think it's sort of proven itself over the past few months to be pretty decent for like small to medium sized 2D games. You know, it's been surprisingly stable, given that, you know, when we started out, we basically didn't know what we were doing. And so we've been learning a lot since then. I think, yeah, I would encourage people to try it out. If there's a little game that they want to make, I think there's a lot of room in the world for little 2D games. So mm-hmm. It's a good space to play in. Well, I guess we'll see how it goes going forward. Yeah, we try to, you know, move it in directions that will make it more useful to people. And so if people are interested in becoming a part of that effort, then we always, you know, are interested to talk about how it could be made better or easier to use and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We added sound to it like a couple of months ago, just because, like, oh, okay, if we're making a game, I guess we need that.
Right, so right.
It's that sort of thing, you know.
Okay. So if somebody listening wants to get started with reprocessing, they have a game that they want to realize, what do you suggest as the best way for them to learn how to use reprocessing?
There is a reprocessing example repository that we'll link to, which you can simply clone and npm install. And basically, you have a blank canvas and you can start drawing anything you want.
And then on top of that, you know, if you're sort of scared to get into it and you want some sort of idea of, okay, what does building a game in this even look like, then we did do like a live stream of us making Flappy Bird, and then another one of us doing 2048, which is a little longer, so you might not get all the way through that one, but it can at least give you an idea. And the both of us are programming, so, you know, we're chatting about our decisions and stuff like that, and so I think it does an okay job of giving an idea of how you would actually use this to make a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we were going for anyway when we were doing that.
Awesome. That sounds great. Well, let's switch tracks a little bit and talk about BuckleScript and BSB Native. That's the other project that the two of you have been very involved in. What is BSB Native?
So BSB Native is a small fork of BSB. BSB is the build system that comes with BuckleScript, and BuckleScript is the Reason 2 JavaScript transpiler. So as people were building things, the main contributor to BuckleScript, Bob, built a little build system that can, you know, pick up your files in your project and then build all of them in the right order. And so it's just a simple way of compiling a whole project. And we saw this and thought, you know, it would be really awesome if newcomers who come to Reason for the JavaScript story could easily get started with native development as well. And so the thought was that the easiest way to deliver that experience would be to build on top of what exists already. And so I took a BSB and basically added a little bit of capabilities to build to native. And there's small differences here and there, a little bit more configuration needed. But roughly speaking, it's the exact same. You know, you run the same command, and you know, the build system just compiles to an executable instead of JavaScript.
And the reprocessing example that you mentioned, that uses BSB Native if you're compiling to desktop, right?
That's right. Being a fork of BSB means we also support JavaScript. We support everything that BSB does. Simply, we add support for, there's a command line flag. You can do dash backend and say built to native, built to JavaScript. And so all of our reprocessing games have been actually buildable to JavaScript and run, you know, in your browser, or buildable as an executable running on your native machine. And so BSB kind of enables that capability of building to multiple targets.
Yeah. So what's in the future for BSB native? You've made this fork, you've added these capabilities. Is it going to merge back in? Is it going to become a separate tool?
Good question. I am not sure about how soon it will be merged in. I'm not sure if that's the best way forward also, which is why it hasn't happened. I haven't spent too much time thinking about that specifically. I think right now what we're facing is that we want more targets. So currently it can compile the JavaScript, it can compile the native, but it's quickly becoming obvious that we want to compile to mobile, so iOS and Android.
Yeah.
And so I think the future of BSB native lies probably there in making mobile apps. So the way I've been developing BSB native has been kind of like how reprocessing has been developed, is very product driven. So for anyone making things using BSB native, I just talk to them all the time and ask them, what do you want to see in the build system?
Mm-hmm.
And then I implement it as people have requests. So right now it's definitely iOS is becoming a thing. And so I added recently a build script capability, which, you know, TLDR, it allows you to write arbitrary OCaml code during the build process. And so that kind of enables the experimentation of, you know, how would we build iOS? How would we build Android? By just, you know, letting the user do whatever they want. And then we'll see how we can like drag this back into BSB native.
Gotcha. Now, the other big name in OCaml native compilation is JBuilder, which is now called Dune. You said that BSB native is kind of aimed at people who came for the JavaScript, so they're already using BuckleScript. How would you compare BSB native to Dune?
I think the clear difference is the configurability right now. Dune has more capabilities in terms of what you can tell it to do.
Okay.
I think that's been their goal. The OCaml ecosystem has had a little too many build systems, and I think you know Dune has been an effort to standardize it. And so the problem they're facing is they have a lot of legacy code that people still want to be able to compile with this new build system. So they kind of have this problem of needing to support a lot of different things that you can do. So that's where JBuilder shines. And on the other side, BSB native doesn't have that problem because we're kind of in this new world of JavaScript people mm-hmm. coming in and then building little reason tools or reason games or reason native apps. We kind of want to cater to them. And so we're trying to build the simplest possible thing that allows people to get started, which
cool.
means that we get a slightly faster build system, slightly easier to install. Those are the things that we've been focusing on.
Cool.
So I, you know, ideally we'll reach a point where, you know, it's not too much of a pain to use either, and then switch back and forth or have them communicate somehow.
Sure. Okay. Now, one of the cool things that BSB native has, that is a little bit more rare in the OCaml world, is it supports Windows. Can you tell us about OCaml on Windows and what was required to get that working?
Yeah. It was there was a bit of an effort there. I mean, so
story time.
Yeah. You know, OCaml has, you know, quote unquote always worked on Windows, but we took it as a goal that we wanted OCaml to work on Windows and not have to do anything fancy with Cygwin or, you know, Windows subsystem for Linux or
sure.
No sort of other layers. Our goal setting into it was, okay, we want, you know, BSB to run in cmd.exe, right? It's like
sure.
Just pure Windows. And so it was a bit of an undertaking. But it came together. I was surprised that it came together at all, but there were some pretty funny moments along the way. For one example, you know, one of our goals also was to make it so that you didn't have any other dependencies. So you can go and npm install BSB native on Windows and just install it, and it's fine, you know. Which meant we actually had to ship the MinGW C compiler and a couple of other utilities like that quietly behind the scenes, and have OCaml use them sort of relatively to wherever you installed BSB and some weird stuff like that. And so we were struggling at one point with, you know, getting the OCaml compiler to find some tool that it needed, like LD or something like that.
Because the OCaml compiler calls into Unix tools that it assumes are available globally.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we did some funny stuff manipulating the path to sort of tell OCaml where those things were. And at some point we ran into some problem and it wasn't finding this thing. And we assumed, okay, so it's not, this system call must not be propagating the path properly to Windows. And it's like, oh man, there must be some weird bug in OCaml standard library. And so, you know, after a bit of fussing around, we decided, okay, we have to go make a modification to the C implementation of the Windows OCaml standard library. And
wow.
This is like 2 days later, right? We've been working on this for a week, and it's like, okay, man. And then that wasn't working for the longest time. We couldn't figure out why our changes were getting picked up. We realized, oh, actually, OCaml ships a pre-built bytecode compiler that it uses. And so that didn't have our changes to the standard lib. Anyway, we figured that out. Okay, like, say, 3 days later, Ben wakes up one morning and has a thought, looks at the code again, and realizes, Windows, the Windows path variable is a capital P and then a lowercase a t h,
no
as opposed
way.
To all capitals. And so we changed that, and it just worked. So,
yeah,
but that was just one story like that. There were a couple more.
Okay,
but, I'll save your time because it was about a couple weeks worth of work to get that to work. But anyway, in the end, we managed to make it work, and it's been pretty cool. I mean, neither of us use Windows for our development, and so we had to do some, you know, talking with other people, and I think it's still going to be a process before we can really sort of say that this is a solved problem completely. You know, I think it's important to not just say, okay, we have support for Windows, bye,
sure,
everyone. And so I think it's still a process. You know, editor tooling and stuff is still something that we want to tackle and make better on Windows, using that stack anyway.
Okay.
And so as far as like what's going forward, what would be good to focus on is probably that, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Cool. So you have BSB native working on Windows, reprocessing as well?
Yeah, that was a whole nother couple of weeks worth of work that we put off for a while.
Yeah.
Actually, what was funny about this is Windows turned out to be easier than Linux. Linux support turned out to be a huge pain, and it's still not 100%.
Yeah, I think I still need to fix a bug on that. It turns out that it seems like Windows is a little more homogeneous of a platform, as you might imagine.
Sure.
So a lot of ways to have sound drivers set up, for instance, in Linux.
Right.
That was a bit of a pain, and still probably isn't perfect.
There's different windowing system.
Yeah.
Which SDL doesn't like pick up automatically. You kind of have to tell it or something like that. Anywhere.
Yeah, all the other platforms. So reprocessing, one of its dependencies is SDL, which is like a cross-platform windowing library in C. And so all other platforms, it's a bit of a big dependency. So we ship it pre-built to Windows and Mac, but we couldn't manage to do that to Linux because there's too many ways for it to be configured.
Right.
But yeah, that's the other nice thing about, sort of out of necessity, we had to ship a pre-built BSB to Windows, but it also motivated us to get that figured out. So now install time is faster there.
Mm-hmm.
That was also one of the motivations for the build scripts thing that Ben mentioned earlier, where you can write arbitrary OCaml code that runs during the build system. Because, you know, the way a lot of OPAM packages do that, or the way we were doing it too before, was, you know, you have a makefile or you have a bash script and you run that at build time.
Right.
And And that doesn't really work on on CMD-EXE, right? So
right, yeah.
If that's your constraint, then you need to do it that way.
So we with this build script ability, we shipped a little library that kind of automatically gets linked into your build script that exposes functions to compile C code. And those functions just will work on all platforms because they use our own C compiler that we shipped with BSV Native.
Okay.
So it's kind of nice. So you can call GCC in Reason. It's a normal function, and it can compile, and BSV Native will automatically link all the stuff that you compile to object files.
And when you say our own C compiler, you mean MinGW, like the...
Yeah, the vendor.
Don't worry, we didn't rewrite a C compiler.
Right, the prepackaged one. That sounds really, really cool, because in terms of getting packages that will then reliably work on Windows.
Yeah, that's one of the fancy ideas that we had, or that Avery had a while ago, was how can we turn Reason into a good Bash alternative? Because one of the good things about Bash is it's really easy to write and make little scripts, but one of the bad things is that they won't run on all platforms. And so it'd be nice to be able to just write Reason somehow and have that as a good alternative for small scripts. And so this is kind of our small test.
Extremely incremental approach where the only Bash command you ever write is GCC. but no, you know, we've worked in enough libraries to realize that, you know, a lot of them aren't just a bit of Reason code or a bit of OCaml code, and there's some more fancy stuff going on and that you need to be able to do. And so that was important to us to be able to expose that functionality.
Sure. All right. I think that's probably enough about Windows. From your perspective, what are Reason's strengths and what are its weaknesses? For somebody listening to this who's just wondering about whether they should look into Reason, what are some reasons to start with it or some reasons not to?
I think it depends on what you're thinking of doing. One of its current strengths are the... So if you're thinking of building a web app, I think the strengths are clearer. It's pretty easy to set up the toolchain. It's just one NPM install. It's really easy to run. It's really fast. Your code gets compiled, and the JavaScript is very readable. And it's really easy to interop with existing JavaScript library. So, you know, all those together kind of make Reason pretty unique. And that would be a great reason to start. If you want to add a type-checked language inside an existent JavaScript code base, I think Reason is potentially the best way to go about this. The weaknesses would probably lie on the maybe the more native side. There's less people doing native development on the Reason side of things. Most native development is OCaml, which is its own little world. But it's a little bit less clear how do you add Reason to an existent, you know, native backend, for example. And that's mostly been because less attention has gone to that side. But I think so. The other thing too is none of the tools that we built are 100% perfect. To give a small example, reformat. So Reason comes with a formatter which you can run, and it will deterministically format your code, which kind of helps eliminate, you know, debates about formatting. And the thing about it is it's not perfect. There's lots of instances where the code just, you know, everyone agrees looks bad, and those things are definitely fixable. But those are, you know, there are things that we need to work on, and it takes time for people to find the problems and then go in the parser and contribute. So I would say the weaknesses is that, you know, it's not like an amazing 100% experience, but we're moving towards there. And the effort is actually really driven by the community. So, you know, I would encourage anyone who sees any problem to, you know, to kind of jump in and help out, because that's kind of how we work, and we really welcome people doing that.
Yeah, whether opening an issue or
yeah, opening an issue is also great. I have friends who will, you know, they told me, oh, I don't like this about Reason, or like there's this bug, and I asked them, you know, why did you open an issue? And they're like, no. And I'm like, what? Just open an issue. Someone will go around and fix them at some point.
Yeah.
So I think, but to be totally fair, I think the, again, to divide between the JavaScript side and the native side, I think the JavaScript side of Reason is very much more production ready. I think a lot of companies are using it and it's pretty stable at this point. So that's nice.
Cool. Well, speaking about community contributions, y'all are starting a Reason Dojo in San Francisco, is that right?
Yes.
Tell us what that is.
So this was inspired by the Clojure Script community. Actually, the idea came from Sean. So Sean is mostly the one organizing, and I posted online. But the idea with a dojo like this is we want to help people get into the language by getting everyone together to build something. And so you get to work in a group. I think the way it will work is that we will split up the participants into smaller groups, maybe 3-4 people, and only one person in the group will be programming and the others will be telling them what to program. So it'll be like a pair programming, and every group will be working on the same project. So we'll come up with a cool project to make, and you know, every group will just be pair programming. And so it's like very low pressure. You have fun. And there's going to be, you know, Reason, more senior people, I guess, walking around, helping out everyone. And the idea is that, you know, you learn best when you build something, and you learn best when you build something with cool people around you building similar things. So
especially mm-hmm. if they have some experience in the area, you can just ask them a question and get it solved right away.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, are there any community projects that you'd like to highlight? Things that you've seen that you think are really cool?
For sure. I was just talking about Sean Grove. He's a very prominent figure in the Clojure Script community, and he actually jumped on Reason pretty early, Reason Native, actually. And he actually just bought into the dream and wrote an entire server-side like thing. Like he's starting his own company, and he just fully bet on Reason Native. And so his whole backend is Reason Native and with GraphQL and very, you know, bleeding edge technology. So really shout out to Sean for trusting, you know, the community to continue to build good tools and contributing himself and shipping. He has a product. I mean, it's not exactly out yet, but it will be.
Cool.
So that's one. And there's two other people I'd like to shout out. The first one is Glenn. Glenn has been Glenn SL, I guess, on Discord. I think his name is Glenn. I'm sorry if it's not. he's been super super helpful. He's been contributing so much to the Reason community, making so many JavaScript bindings and types. And I know this is extremely hard and just painful. Lots of code, dumb code to write. And he shipped a very polished thing called Redex, which is basically a repository of all the Reason projects. And it just kind of has a list of all the projects people built, and you could search on it, and you see the docs right there. And it's just really, really helpful to see anything that was written in Reason just directly there. It helps you not rewrite stuff.
Yeah, so, helps pull the community together a bit.
Yes.
As well, like help you discover new libraries and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's extremely polished. So shout outs to him for doing that. And it's, you know, a shipped product, so that's really cool. It's all built in Reason too, of course, so that's nice.
Awesome. So if you're looking for a library in Reason, go to Redex and look for it.
Yeah, we'll have a link. And the last shout out is, it's kind of obvious, but I'd like to reiterate, it's Bob or Hongbo. He's the maintainer of BuckleScript and BSB. And he's basically the sole contributor to the project. And what he built is truly remarkable. The transpiler is absolutely amazing on many levels. And the build system is also absolutely amazing. It's the fastest thing you've ever seen, you know. And so if he wasn't there, a lot of the value that Reason has would just not exist. So huge shout out to him.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, that's all I've got for us. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.